Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello everyone, welcome to F1 Explains. This is the official Formula One podcast that exists to explain and unpack this fantastic, wonderful sport that we all love so much. My name is Christian Hugill, and alongside me, as always, is my brilliant friend Katie Osborne. Hello, Katie Osborne.
Hello, Christian Hugill. It's so good to be with you again here as we kind of do a big picture overview of 2023.
That is exactly what we're doing. We are marking the end of the season by taking a little bit of time to sit back and, as us Brits might say, Katie, sit back and have a cup of tea and look back.
Ooh, or coffee.
Or coffee. Are you, oh, Katie's on the coffee. That's another thing me and Katie have in common. We love a coffee. Sit back with a coffee and look back at some of our favourite bits from F1 Explains 2023. Katie, our first season together.
Yeah, Christian, there's something about this time of year where you can kind of sit back, be reflective as to what happened over the course of the year. And one of the greatest joys for me personally has been working alongside you and producer Chris on this. And of course, meeting and being part of our F1 community. Like, how much of a treat has it been?
It's been such a treat because I feel like, as we're being honest, Katie, and reflecting, we should say, you know, you and I have worked in the media a long time, Katie, and there are lots of projects you get put on where, you know, don't always get on with the people you work with, but actually we've started this podcast this year. You and I have become good friends. Producer Chris, for as much as we've taken the mickey out of him on this podcast over the course of the year, is a brilliant, brilliant man. And we are so grateful to the tens of thousands of you, hundreds of thousands of you listening all over the world who've sent us lovely messages. So honestly, we've had such a blast making this podcast this season, and we're so grateful for you guys for listening and joining me and Katie on this journey, as you would say, Katie.
Thank you for noticing that, on this journey. That's right. This chapter, if you will. And it really has been a blast. Of course, we've had drivers, CEOs, strategists, scientists, and experts from all over the world of F1. And even though it's at the end of the season, Christian, we still do want those questions because we are looking ahead already. So we've been a little bit reflective and now we can look ahead and think, we want some more podcasts. We want more questions. Why? WHY at F1.com. And we're not going anywhere. More plans, as we like to say as well.
Yes, exactly. More plans for the winter and for the 2024 season. We're not going anywhere. And we'll tell you a little bit more about our plans for the winter and about our plans for 2024 before the end of the podcast. And as Katie says, please keep those emails coming in across the winter. Anything that you don't understand, those emails are still going to be checked all throughout the winter. We're still going to be making episodes. Why at F1.com. Keep those emails coming in. Keep those voice notes coming in. Now,
Katie, those voice notes.
You love
a
voice
Christian.
Note. I'm excited about this.
I do love it.
We're going to start with one of those emails. And anyone who's been with us for a few months will know that it's a very reoccurring theme that I want to go to places where our listeners live, because our listeners are all over the world.
Yes, it is so wonderful.
I love travelling and I love seeing places. We're starting with an email from Malta, a place I have been rather than want to go.
Oh, really? Oh, tell me more. Before we get to the email, tell me, like, can you give me like a 101, an elevator pitch on what Malta is all about?
Malta, beautiful, tiny country. You can drive from one end of it to the other. Unlike the USA, where you have to get planes and stuff, you can drive from one end to the other. Gorgeous, pretty, beautiful weather, amazing beaches, fantastic food, lovely people.
All right.
This podcast isn't sponsored by the Malta Tourism Board. It should be, but I loved Malta.
Yes. Oh, that's wonderful. Okay. And we have friends in Malta as well, so even better.
We do. Maria, to be precise. Hello, Maria. Maria says, hello, Katie and Christian. I'm Maria from Malta. And Maria's right. She says, sending this to you in November when it's still hot and sunny. What did I say about Malta? It's brilliant. Maria says, I started following F1 after I saw a video on TikTok of Charles Leclerc doing a workout and was amazed when I saw the whole workout was targeting neck muscles. So what is the typical fitness routine of an F1 driver, from nutrition to actual physical fitness? Well done on your show, because you're really going in depth about this sport. And from one episode to another, I'm getting more curious. From Maria in Malta. What a lovely email, Katie.
It's very lovely. I also love that Maria from Malta has a little sun emoji at the end of Malta. I love that little extra touch. How cute. It's wonderful. Maria, we can also help you with that curiosity. All the way back in May, we did a whole episode on fitness. And I personally, Christian, this was one of those episodes that I just find the fitness of these drivers so incredible and so overlooked at times as well. So, Maria, coming up, we have former F1 driver and a buddy of ours, Alexander Rossi, who tells us the unusual problem F1 drivers have with really strong necks. That's who we're going to hear from. But we're also going to hear from Antti Konstas. He's one of the world's best when it comes to strength and conditioning. He was actually coach to F1 legend and four-time world champ Sebastian Vettel when he was at Ferrari and Aston Martin. Now, Christian, Antti has been an F1 trainer for more than a decade. He happens to work at Hinsta Performance. They're an amazing company that does both physical and mental coaching for actually most of the drivers currently in F1. And he happens to be the head of performance for motorsport.
Yes. Now, before we hear from Alex Rossi explaining his unusual neck-based problem, let's hear from Antti talking to us earlier this year about why Formula One drivers really have to have so much strength in those necks.
I think we sometimes miss the point on why it's actually so important, because you can speak about the neck from a neck health point of view. So thinking, okay, you physically need to be able to hold your neck up so that you don't get hurt or do any damage to your structures. However, the real reason why the neck is so important is that you need to see where you're going.
Oh, so interesting.
It's all about precision in this sport. Like, we're talking about hundreds and tenths. So if you don't see exactly where you're going and you cannot navigate well through the track, you just don't, there's no chance for you to actually gain that extra hundred or tenth when you can take it. So when you start looking at the onboard cameras that have been thrown in the last couple of years from the helmet camera, you actually see how much head movement there is and how difficult it is to be hitting those apexes as perfectly as we would hope for them to see.
Let me check I'm understanding this right.
Yeah.
The stronger the neck, the more stable the driver's vision in the car, yeah?
100%. So normally when you navigate through a track, your head and eyes are most of the time about a second ahead. So that's how you understand where you are and sort of predict your path, how you should be going through that track to make the fastest possible lap. So the more stable your head is, the better information your brain gets, and this can guide your decisions when you drive around the track. Then this leads into the discussion of thinking, okay, what are the loads these drivers need to be able to manage to have a stable head, to have that appropriate head movement pattern to optimize that sort of bit of information that you're getting as a driver.
I am curious, can you help us non-race car drivers better understand the feeling that it is when you're in a car other than just these G's? Is there anything like going to the state fair and going on the swings, like going in that spaceship thing? Is there anything you could relate it to that we would be feeling like in a car?
I mean, if you go to Abu Dhabi to the F1 race and you go to Ferrari World, there's the one roller coaster that has kind of the acceleration from zero to whatever it is. Like that is about the longitudinal G that you'll feel kind of every time you exit a corner. So like it's a lot. Like it's really surprising to people kind of how much it is. And what's amazing though is how much the human mind and body is able to kind of adapt to it. So when we've been out of the car for the off season, so 3, 4, 5 months, whatever it is, the first like 5 or 6 laps back in the car, it's like, holy crap. Like, there is no way I'm going to be able to do this. And then, like, I've lost it. I've forgotten how. And then your mind kind of starts to slow things down. So I think that it feels fast for us as well. But your ability to kind of process information and the adaptation that your body does is actually phenomenal. Like, it's amazing. Because by the time you get to the end of the season, nothing feels fast. You only realize how fast you're going once you hit something.
Alex, you mentioned your neck. What strain does that go through? Can you feel that when you're driving? Because you guys have to train your neck a lot in the gym. Like, if I go to the gym, I don't do neck exercises. I do biceps or legs or whatever, but you guys properly trained your necks, didn't you?
Yeah, 100%. Like, that is like requirement number one. Like, there is metrics that you have to meet, like, before an F1 team will even hire you. Your neck strength has to be at a certain level.
Really?
Oh yeah. Like, or the conversation isn't going to begin. So you know this from a very young age, that like your neck has got to be stronger than you would think. And it makes it very annoying when you go try and buy a suit, because people look at you and they're like, oh, you're a size 15 neck. And it's like, no, sir, I'm an 18. They're like, no. It's like, yeah, measure it. I dare you.
At this point, you're the skinny, low weight kind of person with this just massive with neck. Like, that's the visual.
But look at all the current F1 drivers. All the F1 drivers, big necks, man. Big necks.
Oh, I enjoyed that. Katie, I've learned something from every episode of this podcast. And that's one of those where I never expected to learn that Formula One drivers have trouble buying suits. Who knew?
What I love about it, Christian, is the amount of times you've actually referenced this little, the amount of time I spent with you that you've actually referenced this bit of Alex's podcast. Yeah. You brought it up to DC at our live show. You've talked about it a couple of different... I just love that that was such a fun fact for you.
I think it's my favorite thing I've learned all year. Is it across everything I do in Formula 1? Not just this podcast, everything I do in F1. That might be my favorite thing I've learned. Thank you, Alex Rossi, and to Antti, of course. And yeah, as we say, if you want to listen to that episode all about why the drivers need to be so fit, scroll back on this feed and it is there for you. It might be something you want to listen to over Christmas, or, you know, when family are getting a little bit, you know, troublesome over the festive season. It's all there for you.
Troublesome. That is that.
Oh, we've all had it. I hope that. We've all had it. We all love our family. But
don't talk politics, don't talk religion, but talk F1, yeah, right? Exactly. That's what, just to keep avoid all of that. Anyway,
this time of year, we've all had it.
Next up, it's back in June, we talked about pit stops and explain the unbelievable work that goes into them. We had on this pod an awesome woman named Gemma Fisher. Now, she explained to Christian how she has transformed the world of F1 pit stops. She nowadays heads up an awesome company called Formula Health, which helps people involved in elite sports with fitness. She did leave quite the mark on Formula One, and this is what happened when Christian welcomed her to F1 Explains.
So in the early 2010s, we've got a situation where Pat Simmons brings you in at Williams and presumably says, we want to make our pit stops quicker because they're so important to the wider race. They can make or break a race. They can be the difference between a podium and a race win. Points and not. What did you do first? What did you change when you came into this environment?
As you can imagine, a team where, and then in all the teams, okay, so the driver was only really the only person that got looked at and sort of critically analysed. So then to have someone come in and turn around to all of the mechanics and all of the people involved in a pit stop, and all of a sudden, all of their human performance and every aspect of what they're doing within a pit stop, I was going to get critically analysed and looked at under a microscope.
I bet you were popular.
You can imagine I was enemy number one. So it obviously presented its challenges when we first started. But like anything, you know, you earn your respect. And obviously when these things start to pay off and people can see the difference you're making, and obviously the results spoke for themselves, then, you know, things do get a little bit easier. But yeah, I'm not going to lie, it was a little bit tough to begin with. So obviously you had to look at, you know, every aspect.
So it feels a little bit to me like the changes you made at this point were on two sides. There was one, the equipment side of things with better, I'm presuming, more modern equipment, but then also the human side of things. Just give us a few examples of what you changed in terms of the people.
A lot of the people that you're working with, they haven't joined Formula One to become an elite athlete. They've joined Formula One to be a mechanic that's absolutely at the top of their game, and they love motorsport and love what they're doing. They're fantastic at what they do. And so the challenge there was essentially you're set to work with people who for 99% of the time, they're a mechanic. They're working long days. They're working 18-hour days. They're on economy flights. They are bent over double under the car and working extremely hard to do the brilliant job that they do under a lot of pressure, and then expected to perform like an elite athlete for a very small percentage of their time, but a very critical amount of time during a race. And various ages, backgrounds, experiences, you know, they might have already had hip replacements, knee replacements. They might have been doing the job for so many years that they've obviously, you know, picked up a few injuries along the way. So there was definitely a lot of priming to be done to sort of optimize every individual that were there. You know, in other motorsport, you'll have, you know, ex-American football players that are kind of drafted into just, you know, purely for pit stops. So this was a very different challenge. And that's why you had to be versatile to adapt to each individual person.
So sometimes it's making them fitter. Sometimes it's making them more agile. So you're sort of taking each individual pit stop crew member and working how you can get the best of them is what it sounds like to me.
Absolutely, 100%. Because, you know, you're not making, pit crew members out of a test tube. You're presented with a team of people that are already there because of their high skill set on the mechanic and the engineering side of things. And then you are tasked with creating an elite crew that can perform under pressure, that can do their job in a split second, consistently can perform no matter what. We would treat any previous and existing injuries, but also look at their biomechanics, look at where they're likely to incur injuries, where they're likely to have problems further down the line if we don't address this at this point. So it's to be proactive and preventative as well on a treatment side of things, looking at anything that they're doing with their diet that might be pro-inflammatory, that might not be helping them with jet lag strategies, helping them with even cognitive performance, and looking at brain training, looking at hand-eye coordination, eye tracking, you know, looking at every single aspect that person needs in order to do that job in that pit stop that's so crucial.
You've mentioned that you came into the Williams team in the early 2010s and made these changes. I've heard from other people in Formula One that other teams spotted these changes and wanted to duplicate that. And I know you then worked with other teams like Alfa Romeo, for example, in making changes.
Yeah.
If I can make a bold statement, sounds to me, Gemma, like you were one of the very key people behind sort of transforming Formula One pit stops into the modern age. So, and I know you'll be modest about it, but is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I think it is, really. I'm not really one for, I don't take praise very well, but yeah, that I'd say it probably is, because if you look at what pit stops were when I first started to where they are now, and all the process, it was a learning process for us all, as you can imagine. I don't have an engineering degree. I was problem solving, diagnosing, and working out the best ways to approach these things as we go along. So it's literally a case of looking over the garden fence. They would see what was happening down at Williams. We did have to giggle because they knew that I was something to do with, you know, she's an osteopath and she does human performance stuff. So, yeah, I think we need one of those too.
Wow. Yeah, it is impressive to have a woman like that in F1. And of course, she kind of being reflective to see the effect that she has had. That also is so empowering. And I love that she can do that. I love that she can say, hey, I really am someone who has helped shape, you know, the teams and what F1's all about. But Christian, if we put it into simpler terms, you sit there and say, the producer on a podcast, the host on a podcast, an editor on a podcast, all of them should be given the tools to get to that next level, right? And I think it is so cool that there was a bird's eye view into the team to make sure that everybody had the parts to be successful.
Yeah, she did that. And you're right. She, with a bit of help from me, acknowledged just how important she'd been to Formula One. She was very modest. Was Gemma, but one of the reasons we wanted to start this podcast, because like obviously we all love watching Formula One, we all sit there and watch on the TV at the weekend, and we hear from the drivers all the time because they're amazing and they're the stars of the show. but there's so many people up and down Formula One. I mean, Gemma doesn't work in everyday Formula One anymore, but like she's had that impact. So many people like her are sort of unsung heroes, people that you just don't hear from have shaped the sport, and Gemma's shaped it so massively. Yeah. So actually it was a real highlight of the season for me talking to Gemma, because like, yeah, she is just one of those people that we don't hear enough from, because like, she's had such an impact on the sport as we watch it today. And then McLaren, of course, broke the record pit stop again this season. And that's Gemma's legacy. You know, this is all using the principles that Gemma brought into the Formula One, like a proper trailblazer. It's amazing.
I was going to say a proper trailblazer. I love that. And I love that she has been one to make a difference and lead the way for hopefully people to come as well. Moving and switching gears, I guess, is the right way to say this. Olivia from Wisconsin. I do love the way, Olivia, you spell your name with Y. Speaking as a daughter whose name is Olivia, that's a one really clever way to do it with a Y in there. Anyways, Olivia from Wisconsin, she said, I just started watching F1 and I'm confused about the role of reserve drivers. Why do we have reserve drivers and what do they do when they're not racing? Which is a very good question. And I think that question is one that many people have. To know they're not just sitting there twiddling their thumbs by any means.
And it is one that exists in the F1 Explains archive, because a huge part of a reserve driver's role is being in the simulator. And we explained exactly what a simulator is in one of our very first episodes. So coming up, F1 Explains resident scientist, Dr. Deandra Leslie-Pelecki, who is an expert in how the world of motorsport combines with science, takes us through the world of simulators. But first, especially for you, Olivia, here's Aston Martin's reserve driver and former F1 racer, Stoffel van Dorn, talking us through his job.
In the simulator, you've got the luxury, you can kind of try a lot of crazy things because it's just a few codes in the software that you're changing, and then you go and try it. So, you know, even if it's wrong, you're not going to get hurt or nothing. You know, nothing bad is going to happen, even if you have a spin or if you have a little crash. It's just a simulator, so it doesn't really matter. Whilst in the reality, you can't afford those things, let's say. So that's why we try out the crazy things on the simulator first before we take them to the real track.
And you feel like those cross over relatively. I mean, there's a good comparison between real life and sim life, except for the fact that when you crash, it doesn't hurt.
There is a very good
ego. It might hurt your ego, I suppose, a little bit, but it doesn't hurt.
We never crash. I mean, come on.
No. Oh, no, never.
No, never.
What not a lot of people know is kind of the work that goes on during the race weekend. Because after practice two, there is this thing called race support. So actually, during the race weekend, there will be somebody in the simulator. Sometimes that's me. Sometimes that's another racing driver as well. But we'll be kind of assisting the racing team on track. So usually after FP2, there's a lot of data being generated at the track, and then that gets fed back into the factory. And then usually the simulator guys, they will start a plan, let's say, or a big run plan where they're going to try out different setup routes. Usually it's pretty brutal hours depending on, you know, where Formula One is racing at the time. So often that's a night shift you're doing. You're starting at, I don't know, 7 p.m. at night and finishing at 4 or 5 a.m. So it's pretty tough. But it means that, you know, all these things that you're testing overnight, you send that information back to the track, and then, you know, the team kind of has a great overview on what works and what doesn't work, and then they can make a decision on what setup to qualify on.
You're talking about a racing seat that is mounted on a bunch of gimbals, which will allow that seat to move in six dimensions, that is X, Y, Z in all three angles. So basically it can respond to or simulate any kind of change, including things like elevation, the forces you're going to feel going into corners, things like that. It is like climbing into a race car. Everything looks like the inside of the race car, except for the fact that when you hit something, it doesn't hurt.
God bless.
But the other thing that's in there are the engineers, because of course the engineers are the mediators between the drivers and the cars. Teams can basically develop an entire car in a computer. The drivers who test say that, you know, when they get on the track, it looks just like what it looked like in the simulator. So, you know, I mentioned the chair. They also have surround screens so that if you look out your left window or your right window, you're seeing what you would be seeing at the track. Many of these tracks have been LiDAR scanned. And so they go out there with a, you know, scanner, and they get it down to the millimeter level on the track roughness. And so if there's a bump in the track, if there's a rough spot in the track, that's all replicated in the simulator.
That was Stoffel van Doorn from Aston Martin explaining his role as a Formula One reserve driver, and Dr. Deandra Leslie Pilecki, a resident Formula One scientist, who wasn't just in that episode explaining what a simulator is, Katie, and what the simulators do, but she was also in another brilliant episode that we featured about racing in the wet with Mika Hakkinen. Do you remember that?
That was so great, and I love his analogy. Do you remember his analogy?
He said that driving in the wet, Katie, is like running through the forest while it's raining with your eyes shut, which, and you never fully, what I love about Mika Hakkinen, he's a friend of this podcast, you never fully know where he's going. And that was one of those examples. I think you said at the time, Katie, I did not expect those words to come out of your mouth. And that's why we love Mika Hakkinen.
I was hanging by the edge of my seat as he was telling that one. But that was a great episode and really gave some good insight as to the challenges that it really is. We all think as we drive in the wet on the freeways and highways, but that episode really took a true dive into what it's like to be a Formula One driver, the science behind it, the mechanisms, the mechanics. It's really, really a great episode.
And me and Katie will pick a few more of our favourite moments from the 2023 season on F1 Explains in a couple of moments' time.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Welcome back. This is F1 Explains. My name is Christian Hugill, and this is Katie Osborne, and we are reminding ourselves of some of our favourite bits from the 2023 season. You've been sending us your emails to y@f1.com all year, and Katie has another one of those emails.
Yeah, thank you to everybody who has been sending in. This is Petra in the Netherlands. I just listened to your first podcast. Man, doesn't that feel like that was a long time ago, Christian?
Yeah, thanks, Petra.
Interesting to get more behind-the-scenes info from people in the teams. I've been a fan for 30 years, but found it difficult in the past to get more inside info on the technical side of the sport, the people involved in F1, et cetera. Luckily, that has changed in more recent years. And I do agree with Petra here. I think it's amazing the access and insights that we do get about Formula One overall.
Agreed.
Now, they want to say, I have a question I'm sure you will get from more fans. There have been changes to the wind tunnel time teams have had. And of course, there's been a lot of talk about the penalty Red Bull got on their wind tunnel time. So how does that work? When do teams take up this wind tunnel time? Can they decide themselves? And how is it monitored? All very good questions.
All spectacular questions. So good, in fact, that we answered them on our episode on wind tunnels, which we did back in July. So again, our answer to everything, Petra, scroll back on the feed. It's there for you. We spoke to Alpine's technical director, Matt Harmon, who told us something very surprising about how F1 big bosses are always watching.
It's policed by the FIA, and they do a great job of that. We have various systems that they will come and inspect and look at in terms of what we're doing. There are CCTV cameras in our tunnels, so they have access to those.
Wow!
So, you know, in the end, it's very much first order our responsibility as good people to run the rules and to do the right thing. But there is also some auditing that happens of that process, and that auditing is conducted by the FIA, and they do an excellent job of that.
I'm fascinated by like cameras watching. It's like Big Brother's watching you. It is
Big Brother, yes.
This is Big Brother. Silly question of the day. Presumably there's no mucking about with it because you must be able to do a lot with a wind tunnel, getting blown about and that sort of thing, even at end of season at Christmas? Is there any messing about with the wind tunnel, or is that strictly not a thing?
It's strictly not a thing. Interestingly, in a previous life, I did run a test in a wind tunnel with somebody actually sat in the car. And one of the things that we had to be very careful was the helmet lift.
Yes.
Because if you get that wrong, you can end up seriously harming the person in the car. So, you know, I think we don't muck around with these things. And to be quite honest, we're always very, very wary of damaging the tunnel. Because if we damage the tunnel, our points a week becomes a big problem for us. So we treat it very carefully. Let's put it that way.
Damaging the tunnel, damaging a human, you know, it could be either or at that point. It is so meticulous in that tunnel. I was blown away, Christian, by the idea of the size of the car and how the measurements and everything had to line up exactly right. But I didn't think to scale, it was, what was it, 40% or so of what the size of the car was.
Yeah.
I thought that was so interesting.
We learned a lot about Formula One, but I'm less interested in that. I wanted to go and just play in the wind tunnel because fun. Because wind and stuff wouldn't let me, as we've just heard.
Fly a kite.
Yeah, well, anything like that. I would just wanted to go and mess about in it. Wouldn't let me. People take Formula One far too seriously. But anyway, but by the end of that episode, I had worn him down to the extent that he said he'd let me at least visit. And that still hasn't happened. So Matt or Alpine, if you're listening, we have this audio. It's on tape. I still want to come and see the wind tunnel, please. If you could make that happen, someone at Alpine, if Pierre Gasly's listening, come on, Pierre, you can sort it out for me, I'm sure.
I think these things people remember. If you think about an episode that we had, someone owed a steak dinner or a dinner of sorts to their team and eventually had to pay it off. You know what I'm talking about? And so
Mark Slade.
That's right. So I think Matt Harmon is eventually going to pay this off. I think you're going to go to a wind tunnel, Christian. I'm going to put it out in the universe. People in F1, don't forget the bets they've put on. And you know what? I think you're owed this one.
So Mark Slade, in one of our very first episodes, said that he still owed Kevin and his team a steak dinner in Brazil, because Brazilian steak, from when Kevin stuck it on pole in the sprint race. We need to check in with Haas to see if that happened. This is all end of season business. This is great. Producer Chris, write this down, please. And we need to get on to Alpine to let me have a look in the wind tunnel. Excellent. Oh, well, God, this is very productive, this best of podcast episode, isn't it, Katie? Anyway, let's go from wind tunnels to those three little letters that it's impossible to get through a race weekend without saying.
FIA? I'm just kidding. DRS. Okay, DRS.
Very good.
Loads of you got in touch asking us to take a deeper dive into DRS, which we did back in August. Now, what I find fascinating is there are people who may have said, DRS seems so simple. What's the question about it? Why would we be questioning what DRS is? But there is so much dimension to DRS, right? And that, I think, was really helpful in this episode for me even. Christian, you talk about learning something. There's even things about the simplicity of DRS that's actually fundamentally interesting, unique, and challenging to even understand. And to help us better explain it, we dropped into one of our teams. Alfa Romeo's head of race strategy, Ruth Buscombe's whole time at university was all about getting into F1. And she actually did some work on DRS.
Yeah, now, I absolutely love this. So not only was this, well, Katie, this was one of my favorite interviews we've done on this podcast all year, and neither of us did it, which probably says something about us. But this is when, if anyone's ever been to a Formula One Grand Prix, which you should, you know, it's brilliant, but a lot of passes, a lot of tickets you have to show. Occasionally, it might be a little hitch. And I was at Silverstone, but I was slightly stuck outside waiting for the right pass. Producer Chris had managed to get in. So because I couldn't get in, Producer Chris did the interview. So here is Ruth, a fully fledged DRS expert, talking to our very own producer Chris Browning-Brandt, who of course had his moment in the spotlight.
Your master's thesis, your big essay, was all about DRS. That's right, isn't it?
Yes, that is right.
How many words was that big essay? Do you remember?
No, I cannot remember that.
Tens of thousands, right?
It was a lot of words and a lot of numbers and a lot of diagrams, so if we count pictures as 1,000 words, we can call it a book.
Pictures count. Yeah, it is a book. It's a book on DRS that you wrote. You did literally write the book. So you're a brilliant person to ask, why does Formula One have DRS, the drag reduction system?
So Formula One introduced the drag reduction system, or DRS as we all call it, back in 2011 with the sole aim of increasing overtakes. So we had the 2009 season, which was our last season with refueling, where on average we only got 8 overtakes per race. To put that in context, that's kind of the same number you see nowadays at Monaco. Then we got rid of refueling, and that upped the number of overtakes per race to 24. For the 2011 season, we made two big changes. So we started with different tyres. So we started with our current tyre manufacturer, Pirelli, and we also introduced DRS zones. And by doing that, you are giving the car that is behind an advantage over the guy that's in front. And the main reason we do that is because you cannot unlearn what you've learned. Rule one of motorsport.
What do you mean by that?
That is because over time, unfortunately, all the aero engineers are very clever, and they've developed ways to find lots of lovely downforce, which has made the cars a lot quicker. But unfortunately, that also means that there's a lot of turbulent air coming out the back of the car. So broadly speaking, it's got harder to follow over time as the cars have got faster, because it's much more difficult to kind of get behind a car. So what the DRS does is kind of offset that kind of credit card debt to give the guy behind a bit more of a shot of being able to overtake.
And what difference has it made to the number of overtakes? Are there numbers we can look at to say this has increased the amount of action?
27%.
Whoa, 27%?
Yes.
All for that little flap in the rear wing.
Yeah, exactly. And combine that with what the other introduction of the new tyres, which has created bigger performance differentials on track, we have actually seen a significant increase in overtakes. So now we're averaging between in the 2017 to 2021, it was around 40 overtakes per race, then got another further increase of around a quarter more, about 20% more in 2022 with the cars that are now easier to follow. So everything is all going in the positive direction for those of you that like overtaking.
Producer Chris Browning-Brandt talking to Ruth Buscombe, head of race strategy at Alfa Romeo, about the world of DRS. And let's analyse the most important thing about this, Katie, given it's a best of episode. How did Chris do?
Excellent. Obviously, and it's not just because he's hearing us right now.
Doesn't he look threatening, look, as he's watching us as we talk about him? Doesn't he like say nice things about me?
Can you pipe in real quick and say, did you learn something in that?
Let's bring producer Chris in. Chris, did you learn something?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've learned something new with every single episode that we do. And something that Ruth talks about in the full version of the DRS episode is the tactics that DRS has brought in to Formula One. And she explains it way, way better than I'm about to attempt to. But basically, sometimes now in F1, there is an advantage to a team, a strategist like Ruth, telling their driver to slow down because it affects the DRS they get and it affects the DRS that they give to cars behind them. Fascinating. So do go back and listen to that if you'd like more on DRS. And more from Ruth, who is leaving Alfa Romeo, leaving the Sauber team. Good luck to Ruth with whatever it is she's going on to do next, because we're big, big fans of her.
We're a big fan of both of you.
Producer Chris, we appreciate you. We appreciate Ruth. And this podcast is all about bringing you those voices we don't usually hear from in F1, like Ruth. But it is always nice when we get to hear from the drivers, isn't it, Katie?
Yeah, I know that they're eating, sleeping, breathing, you know, hanging out, having a good time.
Checking on them.
Just checking, dropping in. We get to hear from the man who's just completed his second season with Alfa Romeo, China's first F1 driver, Zhou Guanyu, and his race engineer, Joern Becker, who's been with Zhou since his F1 debut in Bahrain of 2022.
Yeah, this episode was all about what F1 race engineers do and how their relationship works with their driver.
Yeah, you know, race engineers are the guys we hear the drivers talk to during the race. You think of Lewis with Bono, Max with GP. Those two are known for having, you'd say, a love-hate relationship on the radio. And as a fan and as a viewer, I love it. I think it's so fun. I think radio comms are some of the best part of the race and the race content that we get. And when a driver gets a little bit feisty on the radio, the race engineer has to be a little bit, you know, navigate the situation and vice versa. Ooh.
It's yeah, but GP gives it right back, doesn't he? GP gives it right back.
Oh, it is. Isn't it so fun?
This is so fun. But one of my favorites was when Max was, when I think GP said back to Max, we'll see you on Thursday. That race was on Sunday. And that was with radio comms and everything alike. That was in a recent, one of those recent GPs. But anyways, Joe and Jorn's relationship tends to be a little calmer. Here's Jorn explaining to us how he sees his job as a race engineer.
Well, I'm basically the voice in the driver's ear, the guy who's the only one who's talking and communicating to the driver, especially when he's on the track. I would describe the job as a technical manager because we have a lot of different disciplines to deal with: aerodynamics, systems, vehicle dynamics, powertrain, strategy. Also, the human part is quite important. Our job, and that's the importance, is to extract the performance, the maximum performance of the car. We get a lot of information from various departments. We have to collect all the relevant information and to put it together and to maximize performance whenever we are on the track.
And that is a whole lot that a race engineer manages. Simply, Joe, from your point of view, what's the race engineer?
Well, to be simplified, is basically the guy which keep me informed, keep me calm in different situations, giving me the right amount of information at the right time. So yeah, basically it's one of the most important, let's say, job beside from race drivers. Basically, you get all this feedback from the track traffic. And every lap, we get a lot of information. Who is, for example, in qualify, very intense times, they tell you the traffic behind, who's in a flying lap, who's in a cooldown lap. We get the information, we get the direction of how we want set up the car ahead for qualify for the race. So it's very important, and it's basically what makes you faster or slower.
Joe, what sort of information are you most after from a race engineer when you're driving? What are you particularly wanting to hear from them?
Firstly, my tyre statement, because it's quite clear, these days in Formula 1, you have to manage in quite a lot of your tyres. And obviously, we have several different plans, strategy we can follow. So the tyre state, we can get feedback on when to push, where to kind of back out in order to save the tyres. And then the other thing is that, the gap between ahead or behind. And then, the pit window. So, it's really important because one, the race engineer even tell you when the pit window is open or closed. So that means, when there's a safety come out, you can react directly to save the time and to gain time while, rather than having some communication during the time. So since everything happens so quickly.
Do you think you could compete in F1 without a race engineer? Period.
No, because I think I will block about the 19 other drivers every single lap because, it's so different, the speed in Formula 1 between a flying laps, for example, a cooldown lap, and when we go to very tight circuit, it's impossible to see them just on your mirror because when you see them, it's already too late. So the racing engineer used the data live telemetries, which has the feedback of how many seconds each car around you. So, and that also tells you before every session to remind of, what's the program, what's coming and what you have to do, like mode push, mode cool, mode end, all these things. So there's a lot of things that, drivers, obviously we have to focus 100% on driving to be as quick as we could. But then there's a lot of switches, a lot of other things going on, on your steering wheel, on your dash, also with the yellow flag, red flag. So it's all have to be come by radio.
Joe, that was an excellent answer to Katie's question. But be honest with me, are you only saying they're essential because your race engineer is sat next to you now?
No. Not really, no. But yeah, I think if I have to choose again, I'll be choose be a driver rather than a race engineer because there's so much stuff they have to look into at the time. So it's quite a lot of things going on, like especially when you're behind the scenes.
Love talking to Joe, Katie, and I did believe him when he said that he genuinely does get on with Jorn and wasn't just saying that because he was sat next to him. and it was brilliant to have proper time with two people that have such an interesting and important relationship. But another thing I've learned from Formula One this year about Zhou Guanyu?
What's that?
Lewis Hamilton gets all the praise for being a fashion icon, and rightly so. Zhou Guanyu
agreed
dresses impeccably. That Agreed. Man is one of the coolest men in Formula One.
He has been on covers of magazines, etc. And I think it is, as statement pieces go, I think it's because he owns what he wears. He owns his style. He rocks it. And you're right. I think he gives Lewis a run for his money in terms of the fashion icon of Formula One.
That is the title deciding battle there between fashion stakes for me. Pierre Gasly not far behind. Pierre loves his fashion as well.
Very tailored, right? But it's very different. It's a very different vibe of Pierre. One thing I want to go back to that episode, Christian, real quick, is I loved the conversation about communication. And what I learned in that episode, in fact, was the idea that English had to be the primary language spoken between teams and you couldn't go on comms speaking anything but English. That was a fun fact.
We're very lucky as English speakers, aren't we?
Very fortunate. But I do think that that was a great moment of learning in that episode with Joe and Jorn, a big takeaway for sure.
And also, another thing to take away from it is stand by for F1's new official Formula One podcast coming, where me and Katie discuss the driver's clothes, because I think that's a podcast in itself. Time to move on to my personal highlight of the year, our live show at the US Grand Prix in Texas. We had a lovely time, Katie, didn't we?
Lovely is an understatement, my friend. And getting a chance to meet people along the way. Christian, even you and I walking around in the fan zone, people coming up to us talking about F1 Explains, of course, our live show when people were, I think about one of the women running down the field. I just have this visual. She was trying to come to our stage when we called out her name and she just went dashing down. It was just so special to have DC on stage, Christian, with us answering some of our listeners' questions live, including Crystal, who was there on stage with us, who we also had on our second ever episode, which explained why F1 has three races in the US. That was a great episode as well.
Great episode, right at the start of the podcast. So Crystal was one of the first fans we ever had on the podcast. And then months later, we get to meet her in person, on stage, and she got to speak to David Coulthard in front of all those people. So lovely to actually meet someone who was with us right at the start of our podcast journey. It was amazing, wasn't it?
She's been following along since the beginning, and Crystal, we appreciate it. It was so wonderful being in person with you. But now, here's Crystal getting to join us and asking DC her question on stage in front of hundreds of people.
So ladies and gentlemen, give a huge F1 Explains welcome to our first fan. It's Crystal! Crystal!
Okay, hang on.
We need to deal with this. Crystal, I think we've got David Coulthard fans. I think we have some Crystal fans here. Crystal, are they always that loud? That's extraordinary. Yes.
Here's the thing. Yes. She gave us a little the TLC to say, I think my friends are going to be loud for me. And they were. That is good. That is your tribe right there. That's a tribe.
Crystal, shout out your fans. What are they called?
This is Nelly, Naomi, Cameron, and my boo Roxy.
Thank you, all of you, for coming and joining and more importantly, supporting Crystal.
They are the loudest fans in the history of Formula One, I've decided. Nobody has ever been louder in the sport's 70-year history. Crystal, you're here to ask a legend a question. Crystal, meet David. David, meet Crystal.
Hello, we met David. Already. We
Excellent.
Met, so, but thank you for reintroducing us.
Yes, hi, David.
Crystal, what would you like to ask David Coulthard?
I would like to ask why it's so important for F1 drivers to have a good relationship with their teammates.
Mm. Well, it's important to have a good relationship because it just helps the harmony of the team when you're trying to develop your car. I have always felt that the words, or the two words, teammate, or is it one word, or is it a hyphen?
I think it might be a hyphen.
A hyphen.
I don't know for sure.
Team hyphen.
Stateside is absolutely not a hyphenated word. Stateside.
I've got that wrong. Excellent.
I don't know.
I've always felt it's a misnomer because your teammate is also your biggest competitor. So the only time you can really have a more easygoing relationship is when you're building a team towards winning. The minute you have a winning car, if your teammate wins, you lose. If you win, he loses. So that's where it becomes a little bit tense. So, but look, I had teammates like Mika Häkkinen. We just saw him in the paddock before coming over. We were 7 years together. Great guy. It was very difficult for us to really spend a lot of social time as teammates. In retirement, we hang out and do different events together because we're no longer trying to beat each other.
How awesome has she been with bringing her own entourage as well? Crystal, thank you for coming to join us. Crystal was on one of our first ever F1 Explains interviews.
Thank you,
ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Crystal. Katie, how loud were Crystal's fans? That was insane.
Scale of 1 to 10, they were 11.
Scale of 1 to 10, they were about 19 and a half. Unbelievable.
I loved your comment, though, too, about I don't think F1 drivers have as loud of fans of Crystal as Crystal had or something.
Crystal had a little hype squad at the front of the stage with it. Amazing. Honestly, it was so awesome to meet so many of you at the live show. And as Katie said earlier, just as we were wandering around the circuit of the Americas as well, absolutely amazing to meet so many of you. So thank you if you came to Austin to see us. Thank you if you came to see the live show. Absolutely special to meet you. We loved that, didn't we, Katie?
It was so special. I don't know. The smile on my face right now, I'm just like, just relishing in what that was. Just, and also, you know, truthfully, all of you listening right now, it was just such a treat to be with Chris and Christian in real life as well.
Aww,
because we get to chat so much across the pond. But it was just so fun. It was literally like 4 or 5 days of just fun. What a simple word to describe an incredible experience.
But the perfect word.
But before we go, let's end with some of our listeners' emails. That is something that I love. Jay from London, Ontario, Canada says, I enjoy your podcast. The education on everything F1 is the gold standard. Why, thank you, Jay. That's very nice. On one more comment, I feel Bernie's accent offers at least a 0.2 of a second advantage to a race team. Agree? Great podcast, great format, Jay. Man, Bernie has more fan mail. I love it. I love it for her. I love it.
2023 has been the season of Bernie Collins, hasn't it? Like, but Bernie left the position as Aston Martin head of race strategy.
That's right.
She's now a regular on this podcast. She's a regular on Sky TV in the UK. She's a regular on F1 TV. And people have fell in love with Bernie Collins. And we are delighted to have her.
I did see a photo recently posted by Natalie Pinkham, who said, look who I found. Look who I found at the Las Vegas Grand Prix. And it was Bernie Collins. And I love that she has gained that notoriety within her own compadres. Like, people are stoked to be around Bernie. So Bernie, thank you for what you've done this year for us, for Christian, Chris and I, and also for our community as well.
Bernie, of course, features in our quick fire specials where we tackle a load of questions across the course of an episode. She sat alongside Lawrence Barretta, Will Buxton and Alex Jakes across the year. Have a listen to them already. And Bernie and that gang will be back next year for more quick fire specials. We look forward to reuniting with the gang next year. Katie, you have another email?
Yes, I do have another email. Hi, guys. Thank you so much for the podcast, which I have recently come across. I have been an F1 fan since the late 50s. By the way, side note, this is like in parentheses of his email. I love when people have joined us who have been fans for a very long time. I think that is... Thank you, Dave, for sending this in. Continuing, when I saw clips of a race at the cinema, I cannot remember the film or the race now, but I know Stirling Moss was involved. So a while ago. Although never having been to a Grand Prix, I have followed F1 ever since, and I thought I knew a lot about F1, but I've discovered there is an awful lot I didn't know or understand. The podcast about the logistics just blew my mind. Love that. Keep up the good work. Regards, Dave.
Love that email from Dave. Dave, thank you so much. That is such a nice email. And I love that you've been with F1 all that time since, you know, days of the legendary Stirling Moss. That's fantastic. And our final question of the year comes from Margie in the Netherlands. Margie says, dear Katie and Christian, loving your show. You bring the biggest smile to my face. Thanks, Margie. She says, I've been watching F1 since 1996. What a season. Damon Hill winning, of course. Love Damon Hill. But I've learned so much from your podcast. I'm truly addicted. Which brings me to the following. What happens to your podcast at the end of the season? And she adds, Katie, I'm very sorry for not being brave enough for a voice note. We can forgive Margie, can't we?
Girl, I feel you. I was sweating when I sent my voice note and it was for my own podcast. So I feel you. Hey, our nerve wracking.
We feel you. Absolutely fine. Well, Margie, it's been a very long season for everyone in F1. So we will be taking a little bit of a break, but we will be back before the start of next season, including a couple of bonus episodes which will pop up across the winter. We've already been recording interviews for next year as well, so we're going to pop up over the winter and we'll be back before the start of next season. So keep sending us your questions, your voice notes to why@f1.com, and it's really important that you hit follow or like or subscribe, whatever your podcast provider calls it, because then you'll be notified when we pop up with one of our bonus winter specials, because you wouldn't want to miss them, would you? And then we'll be back full time when the season kicks off.
Yeah, already can't wait for that. But I think you make a really good point. If you subscribe or you follow or you're listening now, just make sure you join us, because those ones that do pop up, you don't want to miss. There's some really great insights and conversations to that. We also have a few thank yous to F1's Andrew Diggle and Luisa Fernandez for supporting us this season. Without that support, Chris and Christian, This podcast and our live show probably would never have come to be the way that they did. Also to F1.com, social media, and video teams for all they've done to promote the podcast, plus our friends over at Audio Boom Studios for hosting the show. Most of all, though, thank you to the community. The F1 Explains community has been so much fun, so creative, so conversational, making it a safe space for people to ask the questions that they really want to know about F1. I think that has been such a big takeaway for me, is that there have been some questions that some may have said, huh, that seems pretty simple. But yet there's been so much depth to it, dimension to the questions. And again, it's been a safe space to be able to share and ask and learn together. So thank you, F1 Explains community, for being part of that.
Loved it. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for sending in your messages. Thank you to producer Chris. Thank you to you, Katie Osborne. We will be back over the course of the winter right here on F1 Explained. See you very soon. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.